hey guys, how's things? Me? Well, I was just being told no. Can't do your show. Which makes me sad. Especially because it was a non-Gopal who was telling me no. Not really like a non-Gopal, and I think he's smart and knows stuff. I like asking him stuff because he knows answers to stuff. But tomorrow, he said tomorrow, Gareth tomorrow, now Gopal tomorrow. I better write that down and not forget. Tomorrow, Gopal. I'm trying to get John Pfeffer, hadn't heard a no yet from him. Jeffrey Lewis, maybe? I'm holding out for tomorrow from him. He already told me no for today. And then who else did I email? I emailed some other people. So far, no interviews, which just means lucky you. You get to hear me interview myself. I'm good on everything. So, that should be very entertaining and educational for you. Possibly. Yeah. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. It's libertarian foreign policy mostly. The full archives are at scotthorton.org. More than 3,500 interviews now going back to 2003, scotthorton.org. And you can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. And you know, I was thinking the other day, probably don't really do that good of a job of it. But I think I try to kind of mimic the style of Carl Wigglesworth, my old hero from 5:50 a.m. in San Antonio. I don't know whatever happened to him. I haven't really listened to AM radio in a long, long time. I don't even know if 550 is still there or what. But I really like that station because, as opposed to Rush Limbaugh and all the Rush Limbaugh clones out there in talk radio land, everybody there at 550, what is their call letters again? Let's see, 550, was it KTSA? Or is that 1200? Anyway, 550 down there in San Antonio. Everybody there, even Ricky Ware, the Hageyite, and all those guys, they always sound like they're sitting back in their chair, you know? I probably don't mimic that too much, but they have a very kind of laid-back attitude. Very unprofessional. And I always thought, that's how you do a radio show right there, you know? Personal. Not all this, hype. So, that's me. I do my show, I probably don't agree with Carl Wigglesworth on very much anymore. I don't know. although, you know, he was getting, he's starting to learn about Austrian economics the last I heard him, which is probably 15 years ago now or something, but he's all right. And 550, you know, they're conservatives, but even back 12, 13 years ago, they were thoughtful enough and educated enough to be very skeptical of Iraq War II. They knew better. Hell, they had David Hackworth on there all the time. And Hackworth knew better for sure. Hackworth knew better for 100 different reasons. And so I guess you couldn't call them necessarily, you know, an anti-war station at the time or whatever, but they were thoughtful about it in a very right-wing, very military town. I mean, hell, probably half the population of San Antonio works for the Pentagon one way or another. And it's a huge city. But anyway, just occurred to me, I hadn't thought about those guys in a long time, but I can't remember who was the guy that came on before Carl. There was a guy in the morning who, it's funny, for a radio guy, I can actually picture this guy's face, but I don't remember his name anymore. Isn't that funny? Anyway, he was really good too. They had quite a few good people there on 550. Yeah, anyway. So that's why you don't get a bunch of hype and a bunch of production values and that kind of thing out of this show. The production, the value is not in the production. The value is in the answers that the guests give, mostly. And then hopefully I add a little bit of value in asking good questions instead of retarded ones, although you can be the judge of that. But that's basically the shtick here. And then when I don't have an interviewee lined up, then I say whatever I want about whatever I want, which is almost always foreign policy, because what else is more important than that? Other than murderer cops, which is also something I've been good on for a long, long time. Well, from the 90s on, from before I was ever even on the radio. Hell, I'm a skateboarder. I've hated cops since I was 11. So, good. I'm a skater, which in the 80s meant we were like honorary black people. the cops didn't like us too much. No. Nowadays, I guess it's not so outlaw, but back then it was. All right. Hey, here's a little bit of business before we get down to business. And that is, and I like this guy, he even uses the word business in his writing the same as me. Spells it right and everything. We're Texans. I don't know if he's a Texan. He says business like a Texan. And anyway, his name is Scott, and he is with the Master Samurai Tech. And what they do is they teach people like you and me how to repair appliances so that you can be an entrepreneur and own your own appliance repair business, or at least get a job at one. A little bit of expertise there. It's always good to know as many trades as you can, even if you don't want to go into business. You just want to be handy around the house. I don't know. So, I haven't cut the spot yet, but I'm really excited. And I think it's not too early to announce. We hadn't really shook hands yet, but he came to me. Seems like he's interested. MasterSamuraiTech.com. And hey, you know what? Even if we end up not having a deal, then I don't care. I'll mention it anyway. Master Samurai Tech. If you're interested in signing up, learning some things about how things work. That sounds interesting, doesn't it? I'm pretty excited about this. Hopefully after I hear the guy talk for a little bit, I'll be able to write up a good little shtick for an ad to convince you better. Which reminds me, you could advertise on the show too. You want to advertise on the show? You got a business? Or you work for one and you think your boss might be into it? You got some kind of non-profit group, and you're not too commie or too far to the right or something like that? Come on. Let's do it. Put peace first. Scott at scotthorton.org. You help sponsor the show, and then you help other people hear it for free, basically, because they can't afford to pay to hear the show, but they want to hear it for free. So if you can help them, you can help them, right? That's how it works. Good deal. All right, and it's a good thing I only have a couple minutes for this because, man, I don't want to spend any more time on this than I absolutely have to. And that is that this stupid freaking idiot, Ted Cruz, I guess I have to unmute all mentions of Ted Cruz in my timeline now. Thanks a lot, jerk. Ted Cruz gone scaremongering about the electromagnetic pulse. Oh, you know what Iran could do? They could float a boat across the Atlantic Ocean without being caught at all or noticed or anything. And then they could shoot a missile that they ain't got up into outer space over the East Coast, without anybody doing a damn thing about that at all. I mean, America doesn't have a Navy, as far as I know. And then that bomb, when it goes off up there, it'll shut out all the lights on the eastern seaboard forever. Now, he refrained from saying they'll detonate it over Nebraska and shut out all the lights in America from coast to coast forever, and that 90% of us will starve to death, which is the usual ridiculous idiot talking point that these people just keep recycling and recycling and recycling. But the truth is, there's three kinds of big boom bombs. There's fission uranium bombs, fission plutonium bombs, and fusion hydrogen bombs. Now, you need to be able to make an implosion plutonium bomb, the more difficult kind of fission, in order to set off a fusion bomb, an H-bomb, which no one other than Ted Cruz and Frank Gaffney and these idiots are pretending Iran could have, even if they were outside the NPT for 50 or 100 years or something. Give me a break. Or unless the Russians just handed them one. Hey, here's an H-bomb. Never mind how the hell they're supposed to get it here. And so if they had what they possibly could make, a single simple A-bomb, if they could turn out your lights, they could kill you with it. So, in other words, it's BS. Thank you.
I love Bitcoin, but there's just something incredibly satisfying about having real, fine silver in your pocket. That's why commodity discs are so neat. They're 1 ounce rounds of fine silver with a QR code on the back. Just grab your smartphone's QR reader, scan the coin, and you'll instantly get the silver spot price in Federal Reserve notes and Bitcoin. And if you donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, he'll send you one. Learn more at facebook.com/commodity discs. Commoditydiscs.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at mastersamuraitech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from mastersamuraitech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at mastersamuraitech.com. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. All right. Well, dang it, Pfeffer can't do the show either. It's going to be a lot of me. Hey, maybe we can do some phone calls a little bit later. I don't know. You guys are into it. All right. Well, so I'm always impressed when a right winger writes something like, hey, wait a minute. You know what? I thought about it for a second, and I think I must have somehow thought of it from your point of view for a minute. Huh. Yeah, that there are other points of view than yours. You might try them out for just a second and see if maybe there's something to it. So this is Ed Hubbard in the Dallas Morning News. Is this the Dallas Morning News? DallasNews.com? Yeah, it is. Dallas Morning News. Ed Hubbard. Now I get it. Black Lives Matter. And what he says is, when conservatives hear Black Lives Matter, we say, nuh-uh, all lives matter. But that's stupid because that's missing the entire point. The people saying Black Lives Matter aren't saying that other lives don't matter. They are pathetically, tragically attempting to insist that they are people too. Oh, I get it. It's already kind of taken for granted that all lives matter, except that you guys feel like you're exempt from that. And so now you're trying to insist that you matter too. Oh, that must feel really terrible. Yeah, I bet it probably does. And then he even says, now I know you guys are going to say, oh no, I got brainwashed by the liberal, blah, blah. But aren't you looking at what I'm looking at? Are you seeing what's going on here? You think they would have done that to a white lady? Now, my answer to that is yes. My answer to that is cops kill people all the time. The reason there's even really a controversy from Mike Brown on in the national media, it's not just because of Black Lives Matter. It's because white people are scared too. Because of Facebook and Twitter. Where every, and this is, and I've been saying this for years too. You know, before Mike Brown and the advent of the national, movement surrounding this. And that is that, forget Rather Jennings and Brokaw, everybody and their grandmother is on Facebook, and every day on Facebook, every local police abuse story, murder or otherwise, sometimes just savage beatings, etc., becomes a national story. We all see it every day. Non-political people that I know say, hey man, tell me something. What in the hell is going on with the police brutality right now? And so that's really why the Black Lives Matter thing has picked up so much steam, is because it isn't just 13% of the population that is virtually politically powerless all this time that's concerned. There's a lot of other people are concerned too. These guys are way out of control. At the same time, his point still stands that are they more likely on a coin flip to beat the hell out of an innocent black person than an innocent white person? Yes, of course. And part of that is racism. Part of that is, as he said, just accumulated experience in dealing with the criminal element in poor black neighborhoods sort of makes de facto racists out of a lot of cops, where they're just prepared for the worst and they're not looking at people as individuals. They're looking at them as part of a group. And so they confuse the last suspect with the next one and that kind of thing. But much more than that is they know that they can get away with what they do to black people because black people have no political power, or at least much less. And on a specific level, they're much less likely to have a personal connection to someone with power, where white people might be the nephew of a congressman or a state senator or, you know, the mayor or somebody. And so, yeah, that's absolutely certainly a part of it, always has been, you know, from slavery on, from the end of slavery on. Blacks have much less political power, so they're the easiest people for persecutors to get away with persecuting, whether they have a real prejudice toward the race or not. In effect, it's the same thing. And anyway, so here's the thing, man, is this guy has finally opened his mind up for a minute. You know, he's not a racist. He just is a conservative. And so all of a sudden he's going, now, wait a minute, man. These people are Americans. Let's emphasize that part of the African-American thing. And it ain't right that they have to live this way in this kind of fear every day. And so we need to do something about it. Us conservatives need to rally around this cause, he says. He says, I'm not saying I'm a conservative. I'm a libertarian. I'm saying that's what he's saying. And he's saying, you know, hey, there are severe consequences from this kind of thing. I disagree that people losing faith in the state is a bad consequence overall. But if they lose their, if they, you know, are willing to embrace dictatorship, they're willing to embrace demagogic solutions as opposed to little R republicanism, that could be a real problem too. Not that American democracy has all that much going for it or anything. But anyway, he says, you know, we got to rebuild this trust. It's the future of the Republican Party and limited government and whatever. Without that trust, the constitutional model of federalism is dead, period. And he's right about that. And, of course, what's coming next ain't libertarianism. What's coming next is more centralization in Washington, D.C., you know. I don't know whether they'll ever bother outright overthrowing the Constitution or not, but we could come to a point eventually where local police end up with more and more overseers from the Department of Justice and more integration with the Department of Homeland Security to where they become de facto federal agents. And we sure as hell don't want that. But anyway, so I dig it. I mean, I'm kind of faint praising this guy, but Ed Hubbard, he's a Houston attorney. He calls himself a conservative. He says, to the family of Sandra Bland, I extend my profound condolences as a neighbor and fellow countryman. I pledge to you that this conservative understands and believes that Black Lives Matter. Okay, good. Now what? Now what? And the answer has got to be legalized drugs. And the answer has got to be legalized drugs out of the mouths of conservatives like Mr. Hubbard here. Liberals saying legalize drugs, man, because I like using them, doesn't really impress anybody. You need bow tie economists and right wing ideologues to say, you know what? This drug war is destroying our society. Drugs aren't as bad as drug wars, not by a long shot. Drug abuse is a problem, but we can deal with it. And you know, there's a thing recently said, you know, super duper majorities, very, very, very high percentages of the people who severely abuse hard drugs like heroin, stuff like that. It's not the drug addiction. It's the personal problems that they can't stop reliving. We can certainly deal with drug addiction without having a drug war that amounts to a war on the politically powerless in the society. It's already a failure, long been, in every way.
Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org.
Hey y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, Click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours, max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts.
All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Check out the website, scotthorton.org. Join up the chat room, scotthorton.org/chat. Just need a plain old browser window, scotthorton.org/chat, or you can go, if you know what IRC, free node, this and that means. I really don't, but whatever. If you do and you use one of them chat programs, it's #ScottHortonShow. #ScottHortonShow. Or just drop by scotthorton.org/chat and hang out in there with the guys. Hey, guys. Follow me on Twitter, @ScottHortonShow. If you want to interact with me there, too. All right, now, you know, man, I'm having trouble deciding what to talk about. I kind of want to talk about Turkey bombing the Kurds. But, you know, I also kind of want to talk about Alan Greenspan and economics. Do you guys follow Rudolf E. Havenstein on Twitter? So, I don't even know who that is. I think it's a hard money guy from 100 years ago or something, but he's a Twitterer too. And he tweets out funny things about economics. And right now he's in the middle of saying something about Alan Greenspan. He had long ago abandoned the notion that Republicans were the natural allies of libertarians. Well, he got that right. I wonder why he's quoting Greenspan being right on something. I guess he's coming at it from the wrong angle. Forget libertarianism. I'm hitching my power to Ronald Reagan. But anyway, so when I saw that, it reminded me of just how much I hate Alan Greenspan. What a terrible person. He's as terrible as John McCain or... I don't know, man. I guess Idi Amin isn't around still, right? The guy, he's just horrible. Here's why. Okay? Here's why. He was the commissar of the currency. He's not a free market man. He was the chairman of the central bank, the government's central bank, the Federal Reserve, for 2 decades. And what he did with that power was inflate. And when the bubbles popped, he inflated some more, then he inflated some more, and then he inflated some more. And that's all he did. And then when the bubble popped again, he said, "My God, I guess all of my libertarianism was wrong. I shouldn't have never placed faith in all the banks on Wall Street to regulate themselves. Look at what a terrible job they did of it." Oh my God. Are you kidding me? Seriously, I hear stuff like that and I just don't even want to live in this world anymore. First of all, it was all his fault. Where'd the banks get all that money? He gave them a license to print it. That's where they got it. And no one... Well, I don't know about whatever, you know, Friedmanites or whatever. But the Austrians, you will never find an Austrian school economist describing the free market as let businesses regulate themselves. What the hell kind of deliberately misphrased? I mean, that sounds like what a communist would accuse us of believing. Oh, you think that the banks just ought to regulate themselves. Oh, God. And then that's what Greenspan uses as his excuse, was that that's what he believed? When he was the regulator of the banks. He was the one telling them just what counterfeiting they could get away with. He was the one who distorted the economy by doing exactly that. And then he claims that what he believed was that free market theory is based around the idea that businessmen are angels and would never do anything that is against their own interest over the long term? Or even someone else's? Is that it? Right. No. What libertarians say is that businesses should be regulated by the market. Not everyone ought to just trust CEOs to do whatever they want. No libertarian ever said that. Ever. What we said was, when they make bad decisions, let them burn in hell. Like, say, for example, when Goldman Sachs is going to go out of business. Let it go out of business. And everyone who's invested in Goldman Sachs, lay down and die. Tough for you for letting those criminals handle your money. Next, Citigroup, gone. Bye. See, that is business being regulated by the market. You're bankrupt. You made bad bets, you're bankrupt. But then, no, what does Greenspan / Bernanke's bank do? After inflating the bubble, after causing the distortion that leads to the crash, they bail out all the banks that helped them do it. All the people that got us in trouble. Now, their outright fascist command economy, so-called free market model, is no good anymore, so now they need to intervene. Oh, what we realized was that now the free market's no good anymore. And now we need bailouts for all the banks, right as the market is trying to work its magic, which is destroy them, which is do the right thing to them, put them out of business. Their real assets just get auctioned off after the bankruptcy, guys. Their real assets don't get destroyed, just their fake ones. But instead, we move from a command economy under George W. Bush to an even more command economy under Barack Obama. I mean, seriously, how retarded do grown adults have to be to let the TV news just replay their junior high school narrative about the 20s and 30s but put it in the 2000s and teens? Well, see, in the 1920s, we had a completely free economy. Never mind that there was a government central bank beginning in 1914. Just never you mind that. Yeah, we had a completely free economy in the 1920s, and that's what led to a terrible crisis because of the excesses of laissez-faire capitalism. And so that was why the hero, president for life, Franklin Roosevelt, created a fascist dictatorship in Washington, D.C., and took control over the economy and took us to war to make everything wonderful. And yes, that was 80 years ago, and yet, never mind that you know that all the government has done is expand since then. That all that Ike and Kennedy, LBJ, Nixon, Ford, exception Carter, Reagan, all they did was double down on all the government regulation. Carter deregulated. The commie Democrat did. But the Clinton years just expanded government in every way. The Bush Jr. years, he was the middle of the road, compassionate conservative. Show me what regulations he repealed. He didn't repeal any regulations. And yet, as soon as the market crashed in 2008, TV pretended that Ron Paul had been the president for 8 years, not George W. Bush, the centrist, compassionate conservative who had repealed nothing. Who had, in fact, passed laws saying, hey, the money that you create out of nothing, put into housing. Put into the stock market. And they said, oh, yeah, but because we had a completely free laissez-faire economy from 2001 through 2008, that's why we need more intervention. And Greenspan goes, I know. I can't believe I used to believe in freedom. I feel so bad about that now. And the Austrians just cry. It ain't fair. It's like the lies that lead to war. Just absurd.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. So Matthew Akins has a full piece out. Remember, we interviewed him about basically a blog entry kind of piece for Rolling Stone about his recent trip to Yemen's war. And now he's got the full treatment out. Yemen's Hidden War, a journey into one of the most remote and dangerous countries in the world. It just hit today at Rolling Stone. And this ain't no fishtail about some pretend rape either. This guy's a real reporter. And I just got it, so I haven't read it yet. Just hit in the email. Anyway, I like this guy. I'm going to see if I can get him on the show for you either tomorrow or maybe for Sunday's show. Oh, no, there's no KPFK this week because of Fun Drive. Anyway. So, now John Pfeffer's got a new piece out, The Kurdish Elephant. In their latest deal to fight ISIS, Washington and Turkey are treating the Middle East's largest stateless minority like pawns. That's a huge mistake. And Patrick Coburn says, Turkey's conflict with Kurdish guerrillas in Iraq may benefit ISIS in Syria. Yeah, that's putting it lightly. And now check this one out. If I can find the damn thing. I do not have my tabs organized well today. I do have it right here. Senior Western official. Links between Turkey and ISIS are now undeniable. A U.S.-led raid on the compound housing the Islamic State's chief financial officer produced evidence that Turkish officials directly dealt with ranking ISIS members. Martin Chulov of The Guardian reported recently. The officer killed in the raid. Oh, you can find this at finance.yahoonews.com. It's a Business Insider piece by Natasha Bertrand. Natasha Bertrand. Senior Western official. Links between Turkey and ISIS are now undeniable. The headline. Documents and the officer killed in the raid, Islamic State official Abu Sayyaf, not the group in the Philippines, but some guy, was responsible for directing the terror army's oil and gas operations in Syria. The Islamic State, a.k.a. ISIS, ISIL or Daesh, earns up to $10 million a month selling oil on the black markets. Documents and flash drives seized during the Sayyaf raid reportedly revealed links so clear and undeniable between Turkey and ISIS, quote, that they could end up having profound policy implications for the relationship between us and Ankara. Yeah, that sounds like some spin. I think the Americans have been cool with this all along and still are. What, we and U.S. and Saudi work with Turkey to support al-Nusra, but oh no, not the Islamic State though. Come on. And I don't know, you know, the Turks are not simply American sock puppets, but on the other hand, if Obama really put his foot down, they'd keep doing this anyway. Do you think so? I don't think so. That's a senior Western official. That's a pretty vague title there. But anyway, I guess it means someone who supposedly has access to the captured intelligence. NATO member Turkey has long been accused by experts, Kurds, and even Joe Biden of enabling ISIS by turning a blind eye to the vast smuggling networks of weapons and fighters during the ongoing civil war. the move by the ruling AKP party was apparently part of ongoing attempts to trigger the downfall of Syrian President Bashar Assad's regime. Ankara officially ended its loose border policy last year, but not before its southern frontier became a transit point for cheap oil, weapons, foreign fighters, and pillaged antiquities. In November, a former ISIS member told Newsweek that the group was essentially given free rein by Turkey's army. Quote, ISIS commanders told us to fear nothing at all because there was full cooperation with the Turks, the fighter said. ISIS saw the Turkish army as its ally, especially when it came to attacking the Kurds in Syria. That as the alleged arrangements progressed, Turkey allowed the group to establish a major presence within the country and created a huge problem for itself. The longer this has persisted, the more difficult it has become for the Turks to crack down on ISIS because there is the risk of a counterstrike or blowback. So you have a lot of people. That's a quote from Jonathan Schanzer, a former counterterrorism analyst for the Treasury Department. You have a lot of people now that are invested in the business of extremism in Turkey. If you start to challenge that, it raises significant questions of whether the militants, their benefactors, and other war profiteers would tolerate the crackdown. Yeah, make a deal with the devil. And so, yeah, there you go. I believe it. I guess they don't provide the documents here for us or anything, but here's a Western diplomat in the Wall Street Journal quoted, Turkey's trapped now, created a monster, it doesn't know how to deal with it. Now, they do have a 300,000-man army, land army, and they could invade and crush the Islamic State, but they don't want to do that, do they? And here's the thing that I don't get. Oh, no, I do get it. That's here's where Patrick Coburn comes back into play. And why it is that the Turks are doing what they're doing now in attacking the PKK and starting the civil war with the Turkish Kurds back up again when they've had peace. And that is that the HDP party won 6 million votes, 13% of the votes in the last election, and cost Erdogan his majority in the parliament. And so Coburn writes, in Britain, this used to be called a khaki. Now they're going to have a new election in the middle of the conflict. Coburn writes, in Britain, this used to be called a khaki election after the notorious general election in 1900 during the Boer War, when the conservatives beat the patriotic drum and demonized the liberals as unpatriotic and pro-Boer. Oh, God. Where have I heard that one before? Thanks for the anecdote there, Patrick. Appreciate that. There you go. So that makes sense. Why attack the Kurds? To marginalize the Kurdish party that has nothing to do with the PKK guerrillas at all. The PKK guerrillas that they've had peace with. But whatever. You're pro them, is a simple enough campaign slogan. And so, good analysis of internal Turkish politics there by Patrick Coburn. But so what does this mean? Of course, it means still that America and all its allies are on the side of the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda against our allies, the Kurds, even in Iraq now. Because the Turks, they're not just bombing Kurdish targets in Turkey and in Syria, but they're bombing Kurdish targets in Iraq, too. You know, the Kurds that we're backing to protect them from the Islamic State, to protect Kirkuk, to protect Erbil and our embassy and the, you know, Exxon headquarters there. America on all sides of this war still. And you know, as John Pfeffer's pointing out, hey man, and Coburn too, this could be a real problem. This could really benefit the Islamic State at the expense of the Kurds. And this could really be the backstab that the Kurds have always feared the most. We're going to completely throw them under the bus for Turkey now? Yep. And what's funny is, I joked about this with Phil Giraldi probably 10 years ago. And I remember him going, well, you know, the Kurds have oil and the Turks don't. So, comes down to it, we might just take the Kurds' side in this. So, maybe the fact that we're taking the Turk side means that we're going to come and stab their asses in the back later. Anyway, here's Biden admitting it while I Google up David Sanger admitting this is all the CIA's doing, too. Oh, Biden, for those of you who don't know, is the vice president of the United States of America. Here he is speaking at Harvard. If this thing will
our play. Allies in the region were our largest problem in Syria. The Turks were great friends, the Saudis, the Emiratis, etc. They were so determined to take down Assad, they poured hundreds of millions of dollars and tens, thousands of tons of weapons into anyone who would fight against Assad, except that the people who were being supplied were al-Nusra and al-Qaeda.
We are working hand in glove with the Turks, with the Jordanians, with the Saudis, and with all the people in the region, attempting to identify the people who deserve the help.
Yeah, there you go. And just Google up Sanger, NYT jihadists. You'll see the CIA's been behind this all along.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Jacob Hornberger, tireless champion of liberty and president of the FFF, brings you the best libertarian writers every month on the topics that need our treatment the most. Read Jacob, Jim Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Joe Stromberg, and more every month in The Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the pocket-sized print edition, $15 to read it online. The Future of Freedom, fff.org/subscribe.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show, here on the Liberty Radio Network. And I guess one of the reasons I got so motivated to really start doing this back years ago was I really had a lot to say to debunk the case for the war against Iraq. And it's not like I think I could have stopped it somehow or something like that. But what I didn't do was my very best. Had a weekly show on Chaos Radio, and we talked about as much as we could. I've actually played a couple of clips of some of that stuff from back in 02 for you here. But I was reading antiwar.com on a regular basis, which means I could completely obliterate the case for war. Anybody who really wanted to could completely obliterate the case for war with Iraq in 2002, and I didn't do my best. So since then, I thought, oh man, you know, not everybody's that good at debunking their government's lies about why they should have wars. I guess I should, you know, this is my comparative advantage in the economy. Not that there's that much money in it, but it's what I'm good at. I ought to do it for you. And in the case of this Iran deal, I guess for the first time in quite a while, it's a matter of war and peace again. See, the status quo is fine. Iran already has a safeguarded civilian nuclear program. All this deal does is lift sanctions in exchange for them extra super verifying that far more than before, and reducing their stockpile of uranium and their ability to enrich more of it, etc. Expanding inspections and all that. But if the deal fails, we don't go back to the status quo. If the deal fails, then we have a real problem. Possibly. And as Gareth Porter has pointed out, and as Sheldon Richmond has pointed out, this becomes a real problematic problem because of Barack Obama and his misleading rhetoric in trying to get the deal signed. Listen, it's this deal or war, they say. And so, in other words, they're accepting the false argument of the war party that a safeguarded Iranian civilian nuclear program is not good enough. And that, in fact, a safeguarded civilian nuclear program without an additional protocol, without subsidiary arrangements, is a casus belli for a preemptive war. Those are the guys in favor of the deal are pushing that myth in order to push the deal. Instead of just telling you the truth, which is, look, man, this whole thing is a manufactured crisis. We're finally putting it to bed, okay? Can't say that. I don't know why. I guess because they suck and they're afraid to just argue and win on the truth. And so if this deal fails, and there's at least a significant possibility, I don't know, you know, what the numbers are. It seems like the president ought to have control enough of his party in the House and the Senate to prevent an override of his veto. However, it's not guaranteed. And they still have plenty of time. And they're putting millions and millions of dollars into huge ad campaigns to scaremonger about this entire thing. The war party is trying to scotch the deal. And so, that makes it incumbent on me to, again, sorry to my regular listeners for telling you what you already know very well, but for everybody else, it's really important that people have a place to go where they can hear an alternative to the hype. Iran has never enriched uranium to weapons grade, ever. They have zero molecules worth of 90% enriched U-235. Or whatever, I don't know, molecules. They got none. They never have done it. The highest they ever enriched to was 20% for their American-built medical isotope reactor in Tehran, and they've already converted all that 20% uranium to the fuel plates to use in the medical isotope reactor. So, there is no 20%. Already there's no 20% that they could do anything with. And then the rest is 3.6% uranium-235, which is industrial grade, electricity grade. It has to be above 90% pure uranium-235 to make an atom bomb. And I guess people have claimed that was it South Africa that supposedly made one with 80% enriched uranium? Meh. I don't know. But anyway, it doesn't matter because they don't have anything like weapons-grade uranium. And what they're doing is they're scaling back their Natanz facility where they enrich uranium from 20,000 spinning centrifuges down to 6,000. And, you know, disassembling the cascades. All the centrifuges are all linked together, basically, is how it all works. That's a cascade of centrifuges. So, and then the Fordo facility, the secondary enrichment facility, is being turned into simply a research facility where there will be no nuclear material at all. The Iraq reactor will no longer be a heavy water reactor. It's going to be some kind of light water reactor or some other finagling they're going to do there in order to make sure that it does not produce weapons-grade plutonium. And no, they could not build a reprocessing facility for weapons-grade plutonium without everybody knowing. And in fact, Gareth Porter debunks Ali Heinonen, the hawkish former IAEA official, claiming that and citing some paper for his claim when the paper says no such thing. That they could build a secret reprocessing facility without getting caught. Give me a break. And then how are they supposed to get the plutonium out of the reactor? Turn the reactor off, let the waste cool for a year, and then extract it all, harvest it all out of there without getting caught there. It's just all make-believe. Yeah, you can come up with scaremongering talking points, but you have to assume six impossible things for them to be plausible. It's ridiculous, man. And then, anyway, they're going to expand their inspections to the mines, to the factories where they make the centrifuges, where there's no nuclear material at all, but where they make the centrifuges. They're going to have to account for all of that. They're going to trace every bit of the uranium from the mine to the conversion facility where they refine it and then convert it to uranium hexafluoride gas. They're going to have sensors and seals beyond any inspection regime in the history of the IAEA. And in exchange for that, no, we're not giving them $100 million to spend on terrorism. Don't these idiots... Well, I don't know. No, I guess not. Sorry, I answered my question before I finished it. Don't they care that their arguments are plausible? No, they only care that their arguments are scary enough so that they work on people who can't figure out whether they're plausible or not, but who can be scared. So they just make up a bunch of crap. Oh my God, Obama's handing them a nuclear weapon. What? No. All you have to do is decide that you don't want to know a single detail about this thing, and then you can go on accepting that. Otherwise, it's ridiculous. And, you know, Rand Paul, for him to claim it amounts to a lie, it's so disingenuous for him to say, oh no, this leaves them with too much of a nuclear program. Well, that's the same idiot lie that Benjamin Netanyahu and the entire Israeli fifth column is pushing right now. That to leave Iran with a nuclear program at all is amount to total capitulation to the demands of the Iranian mad mullahs and blah, 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 except that no one who's not an ideologue and a liar or a damned fool who repeats what those guys say believes that Iran was ever, ever, ever going to give up their entire nuclear program no matter what. The only thing that could make there is no diplomacy that could result in that. Only full, and no bombing campaign either. Only full-scale invasion, occupation, and regime change can guarantee a permanent lack of a nuclear program in Iran at all. And they know that, but they're lying.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show here. I'm me. This is my show, the Scott Horton Show. Yeah, so anyway. You know, I'm mildly hopeful that it will become apparent over the next month or so. More apparent over the next month or so. To more and more millions of Americans, just who all is lined up against the Iran deal. They're virtually all part of the neoconservative movement and or the Israel lobby. And that's virtually it. Now, that doesn't, you know, by itself mean anything as far as who's right. I mean, usually establishment consensus on whatever the issue is horrible. They've all been horrible on Iran this whole time, no doubt about it. So I'm not saying that proves my argument or anything. I'm just saying, in the eyes of the American people, so we have this deal with this country we have all this enmity with. The president went over there and negotiated a thing whereby their nuclear program is going to be extra super duper safeguarded. And you guys are against it. Why? Because you want a war. And because you're the representatives of a foreign country that is not part of America, and clearly, as you admit and emphasize, in fact, has entirely separate interests than the United States of America. Brings us right back to the beginning of the show today. Why does Ted Cruz have to try to bring up this crap about Iran attacking the United States of America with an EMP? If they got one nuke, they wouldn't hit New York with it. Because already you're calling BS. Come on. Iran couldn't hit New York with a nuke. They gotta float across the Atlantic Ocean without being sunk 1,000 times over by the U.S. Navy? You're going to bring a nuke to our shores? Get the hell out of here. And then they're not going to nuke New York or D.C. They're going to shoot it up in the air and turn out the lights for the whole eastern seaboard, just like in some ridiculous Fox TV show. Are you with me, you idiots? See, I gotta tell you lies like this, because otherwise I'd have to say that, hey, Israel doesn't want the deal. And their agents are paying me to run for president and to oppose this deal. They're promising to not pay an opponent to primary me in my next election for the House of Representatives. That would be the honest truth. So instead they have to come up with this crap. Oh, yeah. And, you know, Ted Cruz with the EMP, Huckabee with not just, oh, they're going to put all the Israelis in the oven and all of this. Obama's helping them do it. But then as soon as they're done destroying Israel, they're coming for us next, right? Which just absolutely, you know, is a lie dependent on you having never seen a globe in your life, having never seen a map in your life. You have to have a brain so empty of geography facts that Iran might rule all of Eurasia. You're not sure. Oh, Iran is a global superpower now. They're coming for us, huh? It's always the bravest Americans who are the most frightened by a bunch of nonsense like that. Because or else they'd have to say, actually, no, I don't care about America or America's interests. It's all about the Israel lobby. The Israel lobby's opposed to the deal. The entire American right and a significant part of the liberals are connected to their cause, are loyal to their cause. Simple as that. It's like Bill Clinton working for Chinese interests in the 1990s. You pay to reelect him and he will license military technology to be transferred to the PLA. Quid pro quo. John Wong, you're hired. And remember how that was scandalous? Oh my God, the Chinese just paid to re-elect the president. And then he did what all for them? He gave them 3-stage intercontinental ballistic missile and multiple re-entry vehicle technology? You're shitting me. Quid pro quo. And hell, never even mind that. In fact, they didn't even really talk much about that. They kind of buried that. That implicated too many powerful people at Loral and Hughes. So they just stuck with money, dirty Chinese money. Bill Clinton got elected with dirty Chinese money. Bill Clinton is considering the interests of a foreign power before his own. That's the exact same thing the entire Republican Party is doing right now for Israel. And they're completely wrong and stupid. Because even if you put Israel first, I think you have to recognize that it's in their interest to give up the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, to give up on greater Israel. They're already, at least right at the line, if not already, a minority-ruled country where the majority is disenfranchised. They need to give up the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. So they don't need the Iran fake nuclear scare to distract from Palestine anymore. That's an issue they need to solve for the future, for the good of the future of Israel, if that's your interest. Anybody could see that. You don't have to put Israel first to see that. Any decent, well-meaning person could say, hey guys, you know, your choice is either let those people go or let them have an equal say in your parliament and judiciary and military. That's it. Let them go or give them equal rights. That's a reasonable demand. Approximately 7 billion earthlings endorse it. And that's the only reason that they care about the Iranian nuclear scare all the time, is to keep you from looking at the West Bank, to keep you from looking at the Gaza Strip. Who rules who and how? And so, recognizing that Iran is not a nuclear threat in the first place, and recognizing that Israel actually is acting, the Israeli government is actually acting counter to the interests of the long-term future of the Israeli state, and for that matter, the country of Israel, and the interests of the people who live there, then I think you got to recognize that the deal is good for Israel. Which is probably why a large majority of American Jews support the nuclear deal. It's not just that they're liberals and Democrats and support the president. I think most of them could be said to be, you know, by default at least, generally speaking, pro-Israel, you know, as much as they're interested in it. And not all American Jews are interested in it at all, of course. But the ones who are generally pro, but that doesn't mean they're married to the government of Israel at any given time. And apparently they've got the distance to see what's in the interests of the Israeli state a hell of a lot better than the Israelis do, who keep reelecting these right-wing nationalists who have their country on a suicidal course. It's a murder-suicide, but you understand.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. So, yeah, Rand Paul now, not just bad on Iran and bad on 100 other things, but a damn liar, too. He claims that the sanctions get lifted before the Iranian restrictions get implemented. That's just a lie. He claimed that he read the whole deal before he said that. I guess I can't prove that's a lie. That's not true. It is untrue. He says, oh, they're left with too much of a nuclear program. Oh, shut up. Meaning what? Netanyahu's standard. They have a nuclear program at all. He's saying they should have gone from 20,000 centrifuges down to 2,000, not 6. You know, I might have settled for 3, but 6 is just too many. Well, what was he even saying? They can keep Bushehr, but not Iraq. The whole point is to keep and to extra super verify the keeping of Iran's nuclear program civilian. It's not very good language, but you understand what I mean. Oh, they're left with too much of a nuclear program. They're left with one at all. Little escape hatch for the dishonest. And then he says, no, I think we're much better to just keep the interim deal. That's not one of the options. He knows that that is not one of the options. Keep the interim deal. The EU and the UN sanctions are being lifted. And even if the UN ones weren't, if he could somehow, you know, get Obama to veto his own deal in the UN Security Council or whatever the hell, the EU sanctions and all the rest of our allies in Asia and everybody, they're not enforcing it anymore. This was our big chance. Rand said the sanctions were to force Iran to the table and to give the president a strong hand to play. And then it's just, it's a retreat to simple rhetoric to say, oh, but he didn't play it good enough. Oh, yeah? How so, really? And these are his claims against it, and they're all hollow. They're all crap. The sanctions don't get lifted first. That's not true. Yes, they're left with centrifuges, but the only way to change that is full-scale war, occupation, and regime change. Bombing them, as Rand himself admits, will only convince them that they do need to make nukes, when they haven't so far. Oh, I support diplomacy, just not this diplomacy. But yeah, we gotta bomb them if we have to, but yeah, that'll be counterproductive if we do it, so, I guess we'll just have to keep bombing them and bombing them and bombing them and then send in the entire Army and Marine Corps to Persia, huh? Who wants to see an empire die? Keep the interim deal, again, another fake argument, and then, here's where he's outright lying. He is outright lying. And I actually am issuing a correction at this point, in fact, because when I tweeted this out, I said, look at this jackass getting his facts wrong. Oh, but John Kerry, the Ayatollah said that this deal doesn't prevent him from getting nukes. What about that? Yeah, but the whole quote was, what he said was, the Americans claim that when we all know that the truth is, I had already banned the government from making nukes with my religious edict, the fatwa, that says no nukes allowed. And Ayatollah before him had done the same thing, back when America was backing Saddam against him. And they were also backing Iran against Saddam, but still, with help from the Israelis. But still. That was the quote. The Americans know this is nonsense. I'm the one who issued a religious edict ordering the government that they were forbidden from ever pursuing nuclear weapons. This nuclear deal isn't what does it. We made this decision ourselves as the Iranian state. That's his claim. And Rand is just... So I tweeted out and said, well, look at this jackass getting it wrong. But then I was corrected by a friend on Twitter. Nuh-uh, Scott, because look... He went on Lou Dobbs later, after Kerry had corrected him. If you listen to the quote, I played the clip the other day. As soon as Kerry corrects him, he sits back in his chair and goes, stupid idiot. And I even tweeted his staff, hey, Rand Paul's staff, which of you dimwits gave him half a quote and hung him out to dry out there? And that was when I was corrected. No, Scott, look, here he goes on Lou Dobbs' show and repeats the same talking point that the Secretary of State just completely debunked. Now, who wants to believe that Rand Paul still believed that he had that half a quote right? That out of context, already corrected quote right when he went on Lou Dobbs later? Nope, he's a liar. He's lying. Same as Huckabee. You know, it's just like when someone says, stop! And even though it's only a verb, the subject is implied. The subject is you! Right? When Rand Paul talks, his subject is implied too. You damned fool. I bet you're dumb enough to believe this. And then on with the nonsense. Here are lies that I bet you're too stupid to Google. That's Rand Paul's position on his constituency that he's trying to win over. Jeez, I don't know. I try pandering in every way. I flip-flop all around on my belly before Sheldon Adelson and kiss his ring. Nothing works. Maybe if I call them stupid and lie right to their face, tell them what I know isn't true. And you know what? It's actually probably a pretty good bet. We are talking about Republicans here, right? The rank-and-file Republicans. Well, now finally Rand Paul is telling scary lies that get me excited. I'm sick and tired of all this crap about how I shouldn't have to be afraid all the time. Tell me something scary, Rand. All options are on the table, right? Still? Anyway, Ron Paul says no, man. Ron Paul writes, Iran agreement boosts peace, defeats neocons. You can find it at antiwar.com. Yeah, it's a sad story. You know what, though? The debates haven't started yet. Assuming that his poll numbers are high enough, actually, I think they bumped the threshold down a little bit. Fox had set the threshold so high that hardly anyone was going to be allowed to be in the damn debate. So assuming Rand gets a spot in the debate, and assuming they're not all so completely overshadowed by Trump that he might as well have not even shown up, he has a chance to flop back from flip. Wait, was it flip, flop, whichever. The stupid, horrible, evil position that he's at now, he could say the right thing instead. That's what I'm trying to say. He could just get out there and say the Iran deal is awesome. And the rest of you are horrible on Iran, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Saudi. Let's fight. The war in Yemen. Let's fight. All of you are horrible. I've been reading my dad's articles and now I get it. And he could go out there and he could clean their clock and that'd be a whole new day. But I don't think that's going to happen. I was even not optimistic. I was pessimistic, but I was holding out hope that, you know what? He's been bad on these sanctions and this and that. But when it comes to the deal, for political reasons and for the other right reasons, he might just support the final thing, give it a 20% chance. Nope. What's wrong with me? I should be more cynical by now. There was no chance.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
Oh, man, my brain hurts. I need to drink some water and Advil. Well, eat Advil and drink water. Oh, have lunch. Show's almost over. Almost there, I can make it. All right, yeah, I'm Scott. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. So, see, Palestine or Iran thing still. Well, Amnesty is saying that there was war crimes in Gaza last year, so that's important, although it's such a compromised organization. I hate to just cite them when they confirm my bias, when they're mongering war half the time. They're right, though. It was just horrible. And I promise I'm going to have Max Blumenthal's new book, The 51-Day War, read and interviewed for you here on the show pretty soon. Israel demolishes two illegal, those should have ironic quotes, settlement buildings. Oh, no, settlements. I thought he meant the poor Bedouin's tents. No, it's the settlements. They demolished two illegal settlement buildings. No ironic quotes required at all. And announced 300 new units instead. U.S., quote, deeply concerned by the settlement expansion. That's news.antiwar.com. The great Jason Ditz there. And then, what else? I did the turkey thing. I don't have anything good on Libya. I'm going to try to get Matthew Akins on Yemen for you guys tomorrow if I can. I think I did all my police state stuff for the day. So, yeah, back to Ron and Iran. Ron and Iran. Iran agreement boosts peace, defeats neocons. You know, this is a complicated issue. A lot of people do not have background in this kind of thing at all. Well, you remember Ron Paul? He was a Republican. But he was a peacenik, ran for president a couple of times, real nice guy, old doctor from Texas. All right, so here's what he says. Last week's successfully concluded Iran agreement is one of the two most important achievements of an otherwise pretty dismal Obama presidency. Along with the ongoing process of normalizing relations with Cuba, this move shows that diplomacy can produce peaceful, positive changes. It also shows that sometimes taking a principal position means facing down overwhelming opposition from all sides and not backing down, son. Oh, sorry. No, I thought maybe I misread that. The president should be commended for both of these achievements. The agreement has reduced the chance of a U.S. attack on Iran, which is a great development. But the interventionists will not give up so easily. Already they are organizing media and lobbying efforts to defeat the agreement in Congress. Will they have enough votes to override a presidential veto of their rejection of the deal? It is unlikely, but at this point, if the neocons can force the U.S. out of the deal, it may not make much difference. Which of our allies, who are now facing the prospect of mutually beneficial trade with Iran, will be enthusiastic about going back to the days of a trade embargo? Which will support an attack on an Iran that has proven to be an important trading partner and has also proven reasonable in allowing intrusive inspections of its nuclear energy program? However, what is most important about this agreement is not that the U.S. government officials have conducted talks with Iranian government officials. It is that the elimination of sanctions, which are an act of war, will open up opportunities for trade with Iran. Government-to-government relations are one thing, but real diplomacy is people-to-people, business ventures, tourism, and student exchanges. I'm reading Dr. Ron Paul here from original.antiwar.com/Paul. The article is Iran Agreement Boosts Peace, Defeats Neocons. I was so impressed when travel personality Rick Steves traveled to Iran in 2009 to show that the U.S. media and government demonization of Iran was a lie, and that travel and human contact can help defeat the warmongers because it humanizes those who are supposed to be demonized. As I write in my new book, Swords into Plowshares, our unwise policy with Iran is a perfect example of what the interventionists have given us. 60 years of needless conflict and fear for no justifiable reason. This obsession with Iran is bewildering. If the people knew the truth, they would strongly favor a different way to interact with Iran. Let's not forget that the Iran crisis started not 31 years ago when the Iran Sanctions Act was signed into law, not 35 years ago when Iranians overthrew the U.S.-installed Shah, but rather 52 years ago when the U.S. CIA overthrew the democratically elected Iranian leader Mossadegh and put a brutal dictator into power. Our relations with the Iranians are marked by nearly 6 decades of blowback. When the Cold War was winding down and the military-industrial complex needed a new enemy to justify enormous military spending, it was decided that Iran should be the latest threat to the U.S. That's when sanctions really picked up steam. But as we know from our own CIA National Intelligence Estimate of 2007, the stories about Iran building a nuclear weapon were all lies. Though those lies continue to be repeated to this day. It is unfortunate that Iran was forced to give up some of its sovereignty to allow restrictions on a nuclear energy program that was never found to be in violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. But if the net result is the end of sanctions and at least a temporary reprieve from the constant neocon demands for attack, there is much to cheer in the agreement. Peace and prosperity arise from friendly relations and trade, and especially when governments get out of the way. What is it with that Ron Paul? He doesn't sound terrified at all. Such self-assurance. A Republican congressman, former, who's not terrified of a little third world country. And I don't mean to denigrate it too bad or whatever. But in terms of their state's military power, come on. Best thing that ever happened to them in terms of increasing their power is America getting rid of Saddam for them and fighting a whole civil war for the Shiite side there. If there's a silver lining on that, it's that we've got them bogged down dealing with the aftermath of that. fighting the Islamic State, trying to keep them the hell out of Karbala and Najaf. If anything, they've got an overextended empire that America handed to them on a, quote, golden platter. That's what the Saudi king said. Geez, I don't know, George. It was always you, me, and your father and me and Saddam against Iran. Now you are going, this is, oh yeah, future tense. Now you are going to hand them Iraq on a silver platter. On a golden platter. See, I screwed it up. On a golden platter. And I still don't know whether he got the idiom wrong or he was emphasizing, he knows the idiom damn well, and he's emphasizing that this is a much nicer platter than a mere silver one. But anyway, there's something that Ron Paul told you not to do, too. And so, of course it's a good deal. And America's not giving Iran anything. All America's doing is stopping stealing their money. And America sees from their international accounts. But that's not giving. You know, it's like when a Democrat says that a tax cut is welfare. No. Welfare is welfare, and a tax cut is a tax cut. Trying to pretend it's subsidy to not take from you? What? Same thing. That's what the Republicans are doing right now about this deal. America's not doing a damn thing for Iran other than stopping taking their stuff. They haven't even stopped threatening to kill them all. The headline today, Secretary of Defense, the deal imposes no limits on the United States attacking Iran. Oh, don't worry. We didn't give them a security guarantee. And just so that they don't forget, we might just kill them anyway. Right? Remember Admiral Fallon back in 2007 when he was the commander of Central Command? And he said, we'll attack Iran over my dead body. Basically announced he was insubordinate to Cheney and Bush. I will not do it. He later gave an interview where he said, look, the Iranians are ants, and when the time comes, we will crush them. I just didn't think it was a good idea in 07 is all, mostly because America was fighting for the Shiites in Iraq, and they'd have got them all killed. But anyway,